This episode of the Living Over Existing podcast is sponsored by Topcoat. As busy entrepreneurs, it can be tough to take a moment out of our day to run to the nail shop just for a mani. Not to mention, you have no clue what's really included in the products that they use. But thankfully, that's where Topcoat comes in. Topcoat's mission is to blend beauty with wellness by creating clean, non-toxic nail polish and related products. All Topcoat polish is vegan and tin-free, meaning it does not contain the most common carcinogens traditionally found in nail polish like formaldehyde. They also offer an acetone-free nail polish remover called Succulent, which is plant-based and vitamin E infused. Want to try Topcoat but can't decide which colors are your favorite? Just use code LOE at checkout to get one free nail polish with a nail polish purchase. Again, head over to topcoat.com, that's TAUPE coat.com, and use code LOE to buy one bottle of polish and get your second for free. From livingoverexisting.com, this is the Low Podcast, an audio outlet for women entrepreneurs and founders who want to build a successful business without sacrificing the life she desires. Each week, we interview incredible women from different industries and backgrounds on their journey to success, how they are living on purpose, pushing past fear, and managing their lives around entrepreneurship. Turn the volume up and get ready for honest conversations on what it's really like to be a female entrepreneur. I'm your host and founder of Living Over Existing, Alicia Robertson. Hey, you guys, welcome back to the Living Over Existing podcast. So before we dig into this week's episode, I just have to remind you that this month in the Low Collective, we're chatting all about marketing. So as an entrepreneur, I feel like you either hate marketing or you love it, but no matter how you feel about it, this month we're going to make sure that you're actually doing it right. So each week we're going through different exercises to help you craft your simple, stress-free marketing plan. There will be an office hour session at the end of the month where you'll have the opportunity to ask my marketing coach any questions you may have. And I'll be doing marketing plan audits for anyone who just needs a little extra help or feedback. And for a limited time, you can become a member of the Low Collective for just $10. Yes, you heard me right. If you join between now and the 28th, you can get your first month in the community for just $10. So to learn more about becoming a member of the Low Collective, just head over to joinlow.com. That's joinloe.com. So this week on the show, I'm chatting with Jen Brown. Jen is the founder of The Engaging Educator, Fearless Winston-Salem, and the author of Think on Your Feet, Tips and Tricks to Improve Your Impromptu Communication Skills on the Job. So in this episode, Jen shares how her acting degree led her to helping people become better communicators through improv. She gives her tips for how to be quick on your feet when it comes to communicating, and also why it's really, really good and necessary to be a great listener. We dig deep into her new book, and Jen also shares how she has been able to effectively market all of her offerings by, honestly, just being herself, which is what I love. So if you're looking for the show notes for this episode, you know the drill. All you have to do is head over to livingoverexisting.com/episodes. Hi, Jen. Welcome to the Living Over Existing podcast.
Thank you for having me. Hi.
Of course, of course. So I like to start from the beginning of the entrepreneur's journey just because, one, I'm a tad bit nosy, and two, I feel like there's a lot that we can learn from, like, your early days. So what did 18-year-old Jen want to be when she grew up?
Oh my goodness. It depends on what month of 18 you hit me, which makes sense, actually, yeah, to what I'm doing now. I had just gotten denied from Northwestern University for journalism. Oh, wow. So I applied to like a safe school and I went to Marquette and I was registered to go into broadcast journalism. But literally like the day of orientation, I switched it to theater like that day. Wow. Like no joke. So it's really like, it depends on what month of 18 you ask me. So somewhere along the lines of like a journalist, a broadcast journalist, or an actor.
So why the switch though? Was it just like, yeah, this sounds better?
I remember being there with my parents and on that very first day of orientation, I was like, I don't want to do news. Like, I don't want to do this. And I'm like, I always loved acting. I always loved theater. And I'm like, I'm going to do this. And my parents were like, what are you doing? Like, you took all these AP classes in high school. Like, you took AP physics and calculus. And now you're going into school as an actor? And I'm like, it'll be fine. I'll be fine. And I think it was just that moment. Like, it really is indicative of how I live my life. Of like, this feels right. So I'm going to do this.
Yeah, same. But I wish the 18-year-old version of myself would have been easier on herself with, like, making those shifts. Because, like, I started out as, like, a journalism major, too, and then switched to, like, more of the public relations side of communications. And I gave myself, like, such a hard time about it, not realizing I'm still a kid.
Like, I did the same for acting. I was like, oh, my gosh, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? And even now, I'm like, if I didn't do that, I wouldn't be here. And I bet you feel the same way.
Yeah, exactly. Like, everything came full circle. And if I would have held myself back, like, who knows what I would have been doing right now. Yeah. So what would you say, like, your first, like, big girl job was after you graduated?
Oh, goodness. It was probably in my 30s. No, I'm kidding. Well, I'm kind of, I am, but I'm not. Yeah. Like, I worked all through, I started working when I was 16. I started waitressing when I was 17. And then I waitressed pretty consistently because it was flexible. Mm-hmm. So if you consider, like, service industry and bartending, and there was, like, a stint at Target and then a stint at Taco Bell. Mm-hmm. And, like, I've always been that person that's like, okay, I'm going to work because I can work. Mm-hmm. So I think that, like, my first job that wasn't service industry, because that's a big girl job. That is
absolutely
all the patients in the world. Mm-hmm. I worked as a reservation coordinator, again in service though, but for the McNally family of restaurants. So like Balthazar, Pestis, when it was still around, Schiller's, all these like old school fancy New York restaurants. And I think I learned more about, like, insider culture and more about, like, it doesn't matter sometimes when you call for a reservation because that time is not available to you because you're just a normal human being and you're not, like, you know, like, it was a really eye-opening moment of, like, wow, this is terrible, actually.
I one of the best pieces of advice I feel like one of my college professors gave to me was, don't quit your job after you graduate. And that really stuck with me because I think I was working at like Hollister at the time. But you learn a lot just being in like those service positions. And yes, it takes a lot of patience.
Right? Like, I feel like I deal with customers and clients so much better now because of working in like bartending in Times Square over New Year's. Like, that did me in. But at the same time, I'm like, this is fine. I can deal with any weird customer request. It's fine.
Exactly. So I read that you just on a whim started offering different classes online to help people do things like thinking quick and, you know, like active listening, which eventually led you to launching your business, The Engaging Educator. Can you just share with us, like, what kind of led you to that moment of wanting to help people to be better communicators?
Yeah. So I was, my path is kind of strange. And it's one of those when people say, oh, well, did you know that you wanted to be an entrepreneur? I'm like, I had no clue. And still on a daily basis, I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing and it's okay. But I finished, I was acting and I was a theater person. And then it hit me that I just didn't want to do it anymore. And much like I got into it, I got out of it. And I was like, this doesn't feel good. I can't, like, I'm not doing this for myself anymore. So then I went back to school for art history, which is clearly a lucrative career. And I realized, I was working at some major museums in New York, and I realized that a lot of people had a really tough time being flexible and being in the moment and paying attention to customers and clients and visitors and all of that. So I started offering classes using my acting and improv skills, actually, first on that whim. And I was like, well, I'm just going to see what happens. And what ended up happening was, like, people needed it, and we weren't requiring people to, like, perform at at the end. We didn't even offer it. Mm-hmm. And we offer like so many different opportunities. Like now, whatever, 7.5 years later, after those first classes that we offered, like now people can sit at home and take our classes on their computer and just like do the activities sitting in their sweatpants with their dogs on their lap, just watching on the screen. And I think it's that idea that we all learn so differently. And that ties into all the people I got in contact with when I was working in service and all of the people I ran into in the museum and just meeting people and talking to them, that some of us don't take information in the same way. Like some people can read a book and learn how to dance, and some people have to do the steps. Yeah. So I think that offering that multimodal education is something I've always been really dedicated to, because I don't want to try to make someone learn like I do. Mm-hmm. And that just kind of kicked off a lot of like, learn how to listen when you're in a safe space or when you're in the real world or when you're practicing with someone over the computer.
Mm-hmm. I love the connection between like improv and communication, because I feel like being able to think on your feet and being able to actually hold like a conversation that you're not really prepared for, I feel like that's a skill that often isn't taught. It's almost like either you're good at it or you're not, and you're just kind of left there looking awkward, because I have a history of doing that myself, just looking awkward. So I love
I think people go ahead. I got really excited.
Go ahead, because I love the connection between the two.
Well, for starters, like to finish my crazy jumping on you thought, like I don't think that you probably look awkward. I think that you feel awkward, and then that's what makes people go, oh, she feels a little awkward right now. Yeah. And I think so often we aren't taught those skills. We're not tapping into how to listen, how to respond, how to have a conversation and pay attention. Like, I can't tell you how many, like, C-level executives that I'm working with that are like, I don't know how to have a conversation with my staff. Mm-hmm. And it's really, it's both frustrating and refreshing that they get to this point. Like, it's frustrating that no one's making time to dedicate the hours to, like, okay, before you take this job or in college or even in high school, like, let's teach you things that you're actually going to use, like finance mm-hmm. and conversation skills and things like, you know,
as
opposed to like tapping into these things that these folks are never going to use. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, improv offers this kind of stress-free, fun environment where adults, like, let's be honest, we're afraid of looking awkward and we're afraid of making mistakes. So when we do it in an improv setting, then we can play a little bit more and people can have a little bit more fun.
Mm-hmm. So for someone who may be nervous about being put on the spot, or who may not really know how to like talk with their coworkers or their employees, what tips can you give that will help them to just be kind of feel more natural, or just kind of be quick on their feet when they're kind of put in those situations?
Yeah, I think the biggest one is to really mind your listening skills. Mm-hmm. I think that we're often really, really quick to be like, oh, well, I have to be witty, I have to be funny, I have to have a quick response, I have to be like ready. Mm-hmm. And none of that matters if you're not listening to the conversation that's actually happening in front of you. Yeah. So if you really focus on the words that person is saying, and then you listen for something in improv that we call a gift, so like a present, mm-hmm. and you listen for that, and then you ask a question about it, or you ask for more information, or you use that bit of information to jump off. So for example, if we're talking and I'm like, oh, I had the best nachos last night, and you're like, oh, nachos. So nachos, they are a gift in real life, mm-hmm. but that's the gift that you pick up on, and you're like, oh, tell me more about these nachos. Then look, you've got a conversation going because you've asked a question and you've expressed interest. There was such a cool study that came out of Harvard in, I think, 2012 or 2013, where if you are actively listening to a person who is talking, like actively listening, like smiling, nodding, asking questions, that person's dopamine starts firing. Mm-hmm. And that's your feel good emotion. Mm-hmm. So you start feeling really good around that other person. So if you inspire someone to feel good around you having a conversation, like, half the battle is already done. So I think if you just like follow, like lean into your listening, ask questions while you're getting comfortable. Like if you're only asking questions and not offering any information about yourself, that's a different thing. Mm-hmm. But like scaffold your success, like start there and then move into offering information and asking questions while you build your comfort.
I think that's one of the things that I struggle with the most when it comes to like a conversational setting. It's like, okay, how much do I ask the questions and get, you know, the person to kind of respond? You know, is there a thin line between, you know, really holding a conversation and then almost being like creepy or nosy by asking too many questions?
So I don't see it as nosy because okay. I always think it's like a place of curiosity that okay. questions are coming from. I think the line is whatever feels and appears natural to you. Mm-hmm. Like I think the larger problem happens when all you're doing is asking questions about the other person mm-hmm. and not offering any information because okay. then you're being slightly standoffish yeah. because then you're holding like that other person is doing all the heavy lifting in the conversation. Mm-hmm. They're doing all the vulnerability work. They're offering everything. And in the end, you're not offering anything back aside from questions. Mm-hmm. So it's that balance of like letting someone get to know you as well. And if you're truly curious, like you want to know, it's okay to ask those questions. And it's like, if you want to call it nosy. If you want to call it curious, call it curious. I think it's the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think some people just are easier being like they offer information easier than others because that vulnerability is really hard for some folks.
Yeah. Okay. You're speaking my language because that is exactly how I am.
Mm-hmm.
I love asking questions, hence why I podcast.
How do you take questions yourself? Like, do you like answering them?
I do. Once I get comfortable, like if I know you, like I almost feel like I talk too much and then I have to like almost feel like I consciously have to like pull myself back to make the conversation not all about me in a sense.
Okay. How long does it take you to get comfortable?
Oh goodness. So I am like extreme introvert. So I would say maybe like 20 minutes or so if it's like a full conversation or if it's like in a space where it's just us talking and I can't like be distracted with other people. Maybe it depends.
I think that's a good just reflective moment to think mm-hmm. like if someone is kind of holding back on questions, like maybe they're in that first 20 minutes. Maybe they're in that first time that they're nervous or scared. Like that's mm-hmm. the other side of improv that I love because it gives you this beautiful sense of empathy for other folks.
Yeah.
Because you think like, all right, well, I'm going to ask all these questions because that's going to be my offer is questions. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh, but they're getting nervous. Like they feel put on the spot. Am I being nosy or are they just like scared to be vulnerable?
Yeah.
How would I feel if I was on that side?
Yeah. Well, thank you for offering up those tips. Like, I felt like that was like a personal, like, coaching session for me.
Oh, God. I'm so notorious for that. Like, I ask questions, and then when I dig in a tiny bit, mm-hmm. like, some folks are like, oh, too much. You dug in too much.
Oh, no, I love it. Like, get all good. In my business.
I think that's a really good quality to go into things though, because I feel the same way. I'm like, ask questions, yeah. dig in, because that's where a lot of the magic happens. If you keep things really superficial mm-hmm. all the time, like that's why people hate small talk, because it's always so superficial.
Yeah.
But if you dig in just a little bit, then you get a much more meatier and valuable conversation.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So this past November, correct me if I'm wrong, it was November, you released your book, Think on Your Feet, Tips and mm-hmm. Tricks to Improve Your Impromptu Communication Skills on the Job. First, congratulations on writing a book. Like, that is major. How are you feeling?
It was like, wild.
Oh, I'm sure. I was going to say, like, how do you feel, like, post-book launch?
You know, I feel... It's interesting because it's weird. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't think I was one of those people that I was like, I can't write a book about improv because you need to do it in order to learn it. And now when people are like, I saw your book in the library, I'm like, whoa, that's very weird. Or I'll get random messages from people that are like, hey, I have a question about this chapter. And I'm like, I forget that like books are everywhere. And it's such a weird, like, you don't write a book anymore, I think, to be quote unquote famous or to make a lot of money. But it's fascinating the reach that some books can have, like business books especially, because so many people have like things that they want to work on in some way, shape, or form. And so few companies offer really great budgets for learning and development. So much needs to be taken in the hand of the employee. But I mean, I feel good. I'm really happy it's done. I have so much more time, which is a wild thing because I'm like, wow, I spent a lot of time writing this book, and this makes sense that I have more time to like live right now.
Wow. Congratulations again, because book writing is a huge feat, so pat yourself on
Oh my gosh. I
the
saw a tweet the other day and it was like, if you're writing a book, you should make sure you have a therapist. And I have never resonated with a tweet so
Oh
much.
yeah, like it's both rewarding but also like emotionally draining at the same time.
Yes, it is so weird that it's like, oh my gosh, I feel like I've birthed my brain. That's kind of what it feels like.
I self-published a book a few years ago, and after I was done, I was like, I literally cannot write another sentence. Like, don't ask me for anything. My brain is mush.
Was so grumpy when I was writing. Like, I
Oh.
think I needed like a do not disturb sign because I was just like, okay, I have to do this. I was on a really tight schedule, and I don't know if you were cheery when you were writing your book, but I was like just grumps every day.
It takes a lot out of you. But tell us more about the book and maybe just a couple things that you would like your readers to really take away from
Yeah, so it's very
it.
much kind of like the thing that we just did with like digging in with questions that like felt like a personal coaching session a little bit, because it goes into a lot of things that happen in your day-to-day work life and how to get through them, as well as tools that you can use to build these skills. So for example, if you're talking to any audience, like one person, 100 people, 1,000 people, it has a quick diagnostic of things to think about your audience before you even start thinking about your content. If you're getting into conflict at work, it taps into things like that. There's a lot on active listening, ways to show you're active listening, ways to show someone who isn't listening and get them to listen. So there's a lot of really quick actionable items, because I think that was my biggest problem reading improv books prior, was there was a lot of advice and it was really great, but it had the message of, oh, hire someone to help you. And I'm like, I don't want that. Like, I want someone just to read the book and to feel better. And if they want to learn more and they want to dive in more, sure, they can hire me then. But if you don't have anything to like walk away with and things that you can immediately start improving, then it's all for naught. So I love when readers are like, oh, so I'm doing this and I want to start doing this next level and I'm struggling with it. Can you help? And I'm like, awesome, you've put in homework already. That is amazing. And we're very like, I offer two, actually two free webinars every month off our site, and tons of like, I write a blog post every week. So I think the biggest thing I want readers to understand is like, this book, one, can't necessarily be read in a sitting. Like, you're not going to sit down and be like, ooh, I'm going to dive into this book all night. Because that's hard. That's like a class and multiple classes for your brain. And then the other is like, the learning doesn't stop when the book is done. Like, you have to keep building this skill like you do going to the gym. You have to keep doing it in order to see improvement.
Well, I would definitely add links to the book in the show notes for everyone to pick that up, because I definitely think if you guys can't already tell, it's something that I feel like would make communicating and just feeling comfortable communicating with the world so much easier. So I'll definitely be leaving a link to that in the show notes for everyone to pick that up too.
Awesome. That's like, I think it's one of those things that, like you said in the beginning, we don't spend enough time on our communication skills, and it really up levels every profession if you start emphasizing it.
So I also wanted to dig into, because you, in addition to your platform, your book. You also have a physical space called Fearless Winston-Salem. I want to just dig into what really inspired you to open up this space for women.
Oh, man. So many people don't ask me about this. I'm so excited. Fearless is, I used to say it's like the child of EE, but I think it's like the renegade sister of EE. And in the best way, though. Yeah. So I realized that like a lot of larger cities, so I live in Winston-Salem now and in North Carolina, and a lot of larger cities have amazing resources and places for folks to go. So there's like the Wing in New York and all over the place. There's a lot of really big high-end co-working. There's the Riveter. And Winston like doesn't have the market for that, one, because it's still an up-and-coming town. Yeah. But it doesn't mean that we don't need something that like a place, a third space, so to speak, that isn't a library, isn't a coffee shop that people can go to. So when I was sitting with a friend actually at a local bakery, she was telling me about this terrible experience she was having with her work. And I'm like, why don't we have like a clubhouse we can go to and like a thing that we can just hang out and we don't have to talk about and you don't have to cry here in front of like random people in our small town. So I ended up doing a job for a leadership institute here in Winston and got a pretty sizable check for selling some of my curriculum. So they made a product out of some EE curriculum, and I was like, great, thank you for this payment. Have a nice day. And I drove around a neighborhood around here that felt very Brooklyn-y to me, like it was kind of like off to the side, not quite downtown. Mm-hmm. And I saw a for lease sign and I was like, okay, I'm going to call. And if this is affordable and then this is nice, maybe I'll do this. Mm-hmm. And I walked up the stairs to see the place and it was perfect, like huge windows, all this light, hardwood floors. And I'm like, oh man, now I have to do this.
I can't back out.
Right? And so I had 6 months of runway. Like, I'm like, I can float this for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know how we're going to make money. I don't know what we're going to do. But I can pay for this for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And I signed the lease for a year because, again, this is how I live. Just literally on an edge constantly. And I just built it and I created a space that I'm like, okay, well, we're going to have open hours and people can come in, have coffee, grab snacks and like work on their computers. And we're going to have classes like the Brooklyn Brainery does. So classes in anything and everything. Like if a woman wants to teach something about like basket weaving or and I'm being serious, like we have had such wow, off the wall classes. But also like classes that are like how to be a good advocate, like how not to be centering yourself in conversations and like classes that actually effectively make you a better version of yourself, whatever self that is, from makeup to advocate to activism, anything you want. Mm-hmm. And then Winston is actually it tries really hard to be innovative. And from the outside, people are like, wow, look at all this innovation that's happening. Mm-hmm. And there's this huge economic gap in Winston that it's one of the top cities that if you're born into poverty, you stay in poverty. Mm-hmm. Like it's all these racial issues that I was talking to someone and it's like, it is buried in the dirt. Like it is not even like you move here and you're like, oh, it's not, oh my God, it's really bad. Really bad. So for me, I wanted a space to be able to have these conversations because after I lived in Brooklyn for so long, I was like, why aren't you people talking about stuff to get better? Like, why aren't you opening dialogue or at least getting to know one another? You're all in your little bubbles. So this is never going to get better. So Fearless was born officially May 30th, 2018. And now we have about 4,500 members and programming between 5 to 7 nights a week and days a week. So we have, like, yesterday writers were in. We had a woman that started a company to help women with their wigs and actually have their wigs be stylish. Mm-hmm. We had a one-on-one painting session with a local woman who lost her studio space when a new business moved in. And it was just like, the space where literally our membership starts at $1 a month. And for $1 a month, you can use the space however you want. Wow. We have a group of people that does like ICE training. So if you come in contact with immigration, essentially, like what to do and how to protect people, yeah. All the way to like we had an essential oils class this weekend. And I think that's our spectrum of like ICE protection to essential oils.
Hey, in some situations, you may need both.
Right. But it also, it speaks to what makes up a woman because yeah. like we're not all one or the other. Like mm-hmm. there's so much gray area. Like we have this beautiful Venn diagram of who we are that might be super into makeup and things like that. And then at the same time might also be a really strong, outspoken, like run for political office type of gal. And it's just been like, it's not a income generator. I joke and I say like EE is my baby and my business. It is at best like a socialist adventure in a co-op
yeah.
because members clean up after themselves. You come in and there's no coffee made. You make the coffee.
Yeah.
Like there's a lockbox. You shut off the lights. You adjust the heat. Something needs done. We all do it.
Yeah.
So that Fearless has been like this wild, like we're starting an online business directory that is actually free for business owners as well as users, which will be the first of its kind in the country because everything else is pay to play. And like it'll have like very specific like icons, I think are the best way to describe it. And so they have to agree to our code of conduct with Fearless, which is like no hate, no racism, no, like lots of no's, and then lots of like what you're doing has to uplift in some way, shape or form all women. Mm-hmm. So there'll be icons to show companies that actually connect with it. And that way we can not filter out people who believe in this sort of thing, but also like build a really strong culture and a really strong connection between people that previously weren't connected.
Yeah. I absolutely love that because I feel like the space is much more than just a co-working space. It's a community. And again, you're kind of doing this for a bigger purpose. I feel like all of the co-working spaces around here, so I'm in Raleigh.
Mm-hmm.
So like all of the co-working spaces around here, it's almost like you walk in, nobody actually talks to you. You sit down, you do your own thing, you leave. Like there is no real connection. But mm-hmm. I love that like you guys are like building an actual community. Like I'm pretty sure a lot of your members have connected and, you know, found friends and resources mm-hmm. and help and, you know, shoulder to lean on when, you know, stuff hits the fan. So I love that it's so much more than just a space to come and sit and get work done. I love it.
Yeah, I think, thank you. And mm-hmm. I think that it's this idea, like people are always asking like, oh, are you going to expand? Are you going to start it in other cities? And I'm like, that's not the point. Like the point is for you to expand and for you to start this in other cities because like literally we pay our bills with our membership and that's mm-hmm. it. We might bring in like $100-$200 after that, mm-hmm. but we use that for the space. Like we'll have nicer snacks or if we have a surplus, we'll have like a dinner for members or a grab and go. And yesterday it was like one of the sweetest things that I saw in a while. There was this very, very old woman who had just joined as a member and she's a writer and she's like, couldn't get her internet working and it was like all sorts of things going on. And there was a younger, like a very old white woman. And then there was a younger black woman that was there and they knew each other in passing because of going to poetry nights. Yeah. So they had like this full conversation about this poet that they went to see and they had never spoken at the event prior to it, but because they were both part of Fearless, and I think that we have such a strong brand of like, if you want to be part of this, then you have to come right.
Yeah.
You won't know everything. You might make mistakes and that's okay, but you can't come thinking that you know everything and you can't come with any kind of hate going on or things like that. Like you have to be respectful.
Yeah.
And watching that, I was like, oh my gosh, this is why I do what I do. Like I'm so happy right now.
That is beautiful. That is so beautiful. And again, that's like why I feel like spaces like that are needed. So I guess I can't ask you to bring one here to Raleigh, but maybe
you can
you know,
do it.
I know. I was gonna say maybe in the future I can maybe do something here that will, you know, have the same effect on my community.
You know, it's not as hard as, like, people are like, how did you come up with the idea? And I'm like, listen, I came up with no idea. I took ideas that already existed and mushed them together and made it happen.
Yeah.
And like now our classes, like our income is just from membership. Yeah. So with like if a teacher teaches a class and she charges $20 a person, she keeps 100% of that income now.
Wow.
Because we ask them to just be a member, like be a member at $1 a month. Like I don't care. Like my job is to uplift you.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting because I think people see it and they're like, oh, that seems hard. And I'm like, just get active people on your side. Like people want this. They want community, and the co-working spaces that are just co-working spaces are the ones that are failing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hence WeWork and their big explosion of mess. But that's a whole different episode.
Yes.
Whole different episode. But thank you. You've got some ideas brewing in my mind now. So thank you for sharing that.
Good. Yay. Yeah.
So this month in the Low Collective, which is our membership community for women entrepreneurs, we are talking all about marketing, just because I feel like it's one of those things that as an entrepreneur, we often roll our eyes at. So yep. I wanted to spend like the month of love of February, just helping people like fall back in love with talking more about what they do and doing it in a way that feels good to them. So I would love to know, with all that you do, all that you have going on, what has worked for you as far as, you know, putting yourself out there and getting people to love what you have to offer as much as you do?
I think the biggest lesson that I learned in this and what is now pushing me forward, I was a venture partner with an organization out in San Francisco called WeFunder. Mm-hmm. And one of the founders was talking to us and he had like a huge exit and was saying, too many people spend time trying to convince the people that don't like you or that are meh about you than spending time cultivating the people who already like and love you. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, I was like, man, that's the secret.
Yeah.
That's like the secret to life is you are never going to be right for everyone. You're never going to be right for some people. Why not spend more time, more marketing energy, more energy in general on the people that already like and love you and further build that relationship and get more people like that? Versus trying to convince these other people.
Yeah.
And I realize that's kind of how I live is like, I'm very big on saying like, I'm not pizza. Not everyone is going to like me.
Mm-hmm.
But in the same token, I'm like, why don't I do that more with my business?
Yeah.
And when I started leaning like hard into that with both Fearless and with EE, like we shot up in membership with Fearless. And with EE, we started booking like so many classes and programs and clients because we just kept moving in the direction of like, oh, well, we have to reach a new audience. We have to reach a new audience prior to that. And now we're like, no, we need to create more cool stuff for our current audience. And we need to like build that audience more and get them to be rinse, wash, repeat customers. And truth be told, it's paid off in both businesses. Like, walking a line is never a good thing, but really leaning into a specific group, like that's what's made people realize how much I love what I love and make them love it and make them advocates for it and make them excited about it and telling people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I feel like you're right. We put a lot of emphasis on trying to get everyone and their mama to love what we do when that's impossible. And you're going
right?
Of course you're going to drive yourself crazy trying to get everyone to like you when it's not supposed to be that way.
Right? And it's like that idea, like we say like, oh no, I know my customer, like here's my customer profile. I'm only appealing to this customer. Mm-hmm. And that is lies.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're trying to like take new folks along.
Yeah.
And it's like, just pay attention to who's already in the room and build that room with people like that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Stick with the people who love you.
Mm-hmm.
You can't fail. Can't fail.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Jen, I have absolutely loved having this conversation with you. I don't even feel like it was an interview. Like, we just talked.
Oh, thank you. This has been really fun. I'm excited.
Yeah. I have one more question I wanted to ask you, and it's one that I ask everyone that I have here on the show, and that is, what does living on purpose mean to you?
I think it means living with intention versus obligation. Mm-hmm. So doing things because you want to do them or you think that they'll help your end goal versus doing things and living like you have to.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I love that. All right, well, do you just want to let everyone know really quickly where they can like find you online or even in person since you have a space?
Absolutely. If you pop on over to jenbrown.co, that's J-E-N, brown like the color, .co, it connects to my book, my business, my social media handles, Fearless, like all of that stuff. So that's generally the easiest place to find me. I'm also really snarky on Twitter a lot. I get very spicy.
I love and then, Twitter.
I know we follow each other, and I was thinking about that. I was like, oh, sometimes people bring up that I'm spicy, and I'm like, it's fine. This is who I am. It'll be all right. But just like I truly live how I am because I don't try to please everyone. Yeah. So if you do follow me on a social media and you see me with a hot take, I apologize. I am not trying to be pizza. But yeah, I'm all over the place. And I really love hearing from folks. So I actually met someone. She listened to another podcast. Mm-hmm. And she was like, she came into the space, and because she heard about the space through a podcast that I was on, and then she talked to me, and she's like, oh my god, it's you. And I was like, what are you talking about? And it was very weird because aww. I had never met someone in that direction.
Yeah,
like in the direction I've met them, like, oh, I heard about like you, and I came in to see your space. And it was like, no, she heard about the space on the podcast mm-hmm. and came in to see it and didn't think I was going to be there. Aww. So that was like a very funny moment. But I love talking to people because I'm super awkward in real life, like because I'm just myself so mm-hmm. much, but not like I don't make you feel awkward. I just am kind of goofy and silly. Mm-hmm. So just email, ask, question, anything like that.
Yeah. Well, look, I am down to be awkward with you at any time, so just let me know.
I'll have to come out to Raleigh, and then we'll, like, I'm out there consistently. I'll just have to let you know when I'm out there.
Yes, please do, please do. And my family lives in High Point, so literally not too far. Yeah.
Well, Jen, you're going to have to come out to Fearless.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, Jen, thank you so much again for joining me on the podcast.
Awesome. Thank you for having me so much.
If you love this episode, don't forget to rate the show and leave a review over on the Apple Podcast app. You can also share your favorite episodes with me over on Instagram at @livingoverexisting. I love seeing screenshots of your favorite episodes. And if you're looking to connect with us further, every single Sunday in our newsletter, The Weekly 3, we send out one affirmation, one podcast, and one article designed to help you have the best week ever. You can sign up now by heading over to livingoverexisting.com/newsletter.